Good, how are you?
It's recording.
Thank you. Good morning, I'd like to call the May 21st Pension Fund Committee meeting to order. Before we begin, I'd like to amend the agenda. I'd like to remove the pension and OPEB investment policy statement review. Mr. Schoen and I had discussed prior to the meeting that this would be best fit at our year-end review that we do in August. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to have a motion to amend the agenda.
So,
second. And a second, and take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the February 26, 2015 minutes. They were distributed prior to this meeting. Do you have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. The next item is the investment analysis for the quarter ended March 31st, 2015. And at this time, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Schoen.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Go to tab one. You'll see on page one and two what I think are the key highlights of what happened in the economy and the financial markets first quarter. You know, the big news really was the significant increase in appreciation in the U.S. dollar. This happened primarily because interest rates, although they seem low here, are much higher on an inflation-adjusted basis, real, actually nominal and real, than they are in most of the rest of the world. Germany, their interest rates are about 0.5%. Swiss, you know, in Switzerland, they're, in some cases, you actually have to pay the bank to hold your money. So even with our low interest rates, with a higher return than elsewhere, what happens is there's a flow of funds from over there. The investors will bring the money over to the U.S., buy U.S., you know, treasuries, and that appreciates the U.S. dollar. It was a very significant appreciation. What's that mean to Sussex County? Let me put it more on a personal basis, and then I'll put it on as it relates to the pension fund. If our dollar appreciates, then the cost of goods that we buy from overseas are less expensive. Okay, so from an inflation perspective, that's good. You know, what we buy overseas, so it keeps the cost down. From a manufacturing perspective, that's not attractive because our cost of goods are more expensive vis-a-vis ones overseas. So it could have a negative impact on, you know, U.S. manufacturers, especially the ones that are primarily not only domiciled in the U.S., but most of the production is in the U.S. And we think we're starting to see some of that already. I'll get to that in a moment. From an investment perspective, normally, well, actually, what that would mean is your earnings overseas are, when you bring them back to the U.S. because of the currency play, will be devalued. So it would have a negative impact on your returns from overseas investments. So you would think from that last statement that international stocks would have been less attractive than U.S. stocks last quarter. And actually, it was not that way. International stocks actually significantly outperformed the U.S. on local currency. I mean, if you were somebody who lived in that country, Western Europe, you know, I'll pick that specifically, the returns there were 10 to 15%, okay? And doubly, so you think, well, yeah, but haven't we been hearing that the economies in the rest of the world have been growing at a slower rate than the U.S.? Yes. But most of those countries now, or a fair number of them, have started to do what we did many years ago, which was lower their interest rates. So under the expectation that they will grow at a faster rate, and under the expectation that because of the stronger U.S. dollar, their economies would be stronger, okay, then their markets grew significantly. When you brought those earnings back over here, they were knocked down, but still not knocked down enough that they overcame the other play. So international stocks outperformed U.S. stocks for the quarter. We've continued to see that so far this quarter also. It was some of why we tried to nudge you up the line on how much you had in international stocks, or at least have global equity managers who would, you know, hopefully make the right decisions to over or underweight U.S. versus non-U.S. stocks in your portfolio. The other big headline news was oil prices dropped significantly. You know, now we're starting to see them go back up now. You might say, well, Michael's gas at the pump is up. But I'm talking about for first quarter. And for the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, you know, crude prices were down below $48 a barrel. Remember, not too long ago, they're up over 100. And if you've read the white paper we did last year and again this year, we think sort of, I'll call it normal clearing rate, is in sort of the 60 to 80 range. So we thought it shot up too high, and we thought it was too low. Now it's back up getting close to 60 now. So that's why you've seen the price at the pump go up. But keep in mind, it's still a lot lower than it was a couple of years ago. This had an impact on commodity investments, but you don't have a specific allocation to commodities. We personally have not been believers in that because of the volatility in that. Indirectly, you have exposure to commodities because you have investment like in Exxon and companies like that, and large cap value stocks, which is where you find energy. Most energy stocks fall in that area. That was the only area within U.S. stocks that had negative returns last quarter. If you just look at the third bullet point, real GDP, which is the inflation adjusted, grew at a rate much slower than expected, at just 0.2%. Now, last year in the first quarter, it grew at a rate much slower than expected. But we saw it bounce back second, third, and fourth quarter. And being able to look back, I think most economists would say, well, what happened is it was the weather that caused that, and it got caught back up. It was just delayed consumption. Now, the question is that true this year because we had another bad winter, cold winter in the Northeast? You know, I can only speculate or guess, you know, is that I think this slower growth was probably a combination of both areas I mentioned. I think it might be somewhat weather related, and it might be also because of the stronger dollar. A year from now, I'll be able to tell you. But that our supposition is we think there's a combination of those events going on. As I mentioned, equities outperform fixed income. So if you go to the bottom of page 2, everything you'll see, the format's a little bit different. What we've done here is we put the summary observations on page 1, and we put graphs on page 2 that support that information. So you can see the upper left-hand side, you see the weaker dollar to the stronger dollar. It's a trade-weighted dollar index. You see on the right, upper right-hand, the West Texas immediate crude, the oil price is going down, okay? In the lower left-hand side, you see the asset class returns. You can see international, the gold bar is for the first quarter. The blue is for the 1 year being from April 1st to March 31st, okay? And you can see over the full year, U.S. equities was the winner. For the quarter, it was international equities, okay? And bonds, surprisingly, continue to do better than we expect, but that's because interest rates have gone down, or had gone down, they start going back up this past quarter, and that wasn't expected either. But as I've mentioned before, that's sort of a short-term gain that you get because the interest rates went down, you got some capital appreciation in your bonds, but now you're starting at a lower level. So the next 5 to 10 years have even lower expected returns on fixed income than they did even a year ago. Okay. So that's the economy. Let me just touch on page 7, then I'll ask if you have any questions about that, and we'll get specifically your own portfolio. But you can see on page 7, you know, you break it between large, mid, and small cap stocks. You know, the winner for the, well, let me do the reverse. The loser for the year was small cap stocks, up 8.2. That's a relative because mid cap stocks were up 13.7, large cap up 12.3. For the quarter, it was a large cap, this is the gray bars, which was the loser, up only 0.5, and primarily driven because both utility stocks and energy stocks were negative last quarter, the two sectors that were negative. You can see the large cap value was down 2.1. You were broadly diversified across all these asset classes, so you don't have a heavy bet or weighting to any of those, but you do have a little extra, the mid cap, which we've always talked about, and at least for this past quarter, and especially this past year, you know, that's outperformed the other two areas. Okay, we do think, you know, There won't, in every given year, mid-cap won't outperform, but we do observe that 5, 10, 20, and 30 years, mid-cap has outperformed small and large cap with less volatility than small cap. And I did ask one of the guys in my office, I said, well, is that, now that you've seen, we've seen the bigger gains there, now is there still any advantage to have an overweight to mid-cap, or has that sort of been rectified by clearing of the market? But there seems to be, you know, when we look at it, actually the earnings growth of mid-cap stocks is greater than small and large cap. So there is a justifiable reason. If they grow at a faster rate and have continued fairly consistently, and if they were to continue to do that, then you would expect higher returns than the other areas. That's why you have a little extra weighting to mid-cap in your portfolio. We've liked that a long time. Not a lot, but just a little extra in there. Okay. Any questions about the economy and the markets? And if you want longer-term numbers, you can see them on page 12 and 13. So go to the next tab, page 15. At the end of March, portfolio value was $73.3 million. And in the back, you'll see the updates. At the end of April, you're at $73.8 million. First quarter gain of $1.7 million, yearly gain of 5.7. And the quarterly return of 2.4 and 1 year of 8.4. You continue to have very, very strong peer group rankings. You know, 1 year in the top 7%, 3 years top 13, 5 years top 17. That's very strong. And I've mentioned this before, but even, I'll say more surprising, but somewhat surprising in that your target is only 60% equities. And so it's been the plans that have had higher allocations to equities that have outperformed during a rising equity market. Well, your target's only 60. Now, the reality is you're really probably about 65 because the state has pretty consistently run at about 70% equities, even though their target's 60. The part that's not with the state, you stay very true to the 60-40 split. So all in all, you're about 65, 66% equities. But even then, you know, we have a lot of clients who are at 65% equities, and you know, your returns are right at the top among, you know, our client base also. This is a national database of 225, 230 plants of all sizes, you know, public funds. The new Vanguard funds are added to return. You did that late last year. The small and mid-cap stocks outperform large cap, so that, at least for the past quarter, was beneficial to you. And the state pool continued to have very strong performance. At this point, you know, I will say everything you have seems to be working really well. I don't think that's always, you shouldn't always then say, therefore, make no changes. But everything's working well, and I see no reasons to make any changes because everything's structured well, performing well. You've lowered your costs, some by adding some index funds, you know, in the mid and small cap area. And I think the only issue at hand would be there's some, I'll use the term excess cash at the end of the year that you wanted to rebalance and invest. Correct, Jan?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we want to talk about that? Or do you want to?
We can. I had it later on the
okay.
agenda, but no, let's just do that and then we can move on to the OPEB.
Okay. So in the back of the page, there's this page that says Sussex County Pension. And Gina had let us know there was $850,000 of this was the excess from the contributions minus the benefit payments.
Correct. Okay. Yes. If you recall, what we're doing this year is that we're contributing, we're paying right out of the general fund, and that makes the contribution made throughout the whole year. So when I look at, we're getting close to June 30th, what do we have left that hasn't been spent in pension expense that we need to contribute? It works out to be about $850,000. So we need to invest that before June 30.
And based upon, you know, your targeted asset allocation mix, and we really look at the non-state piece, you know, you're over-allocated to equities, under-allocated to fixed income. So you know, our thoughts is that the $850,000 goes to Wilmington Trust and the bond portfolio they're managing.
Okay. Do I have a motion or a question?
Yeah, a question. I'm not sure I'm looking at the right page, but The one, oh, I see. Okay, so fixed income on one page is showing like 11%, but that doesn't count what the state's invested in fixed income.
That is correct, yeah.
But in total, we're probably like 65% equities, is that?
That's a good ballpark number, 65-66%, yeah. Which, quite frankly, that's where I'd, based upon your 7.5% return assumption, that's where I really would like to see you anyway. You chose on the OPEB side, you did change your investment policy statement. To have a target of 65, you chose on the pension to stay at 60, but that's because of noting that the state many times will be up over that 60 and into the 70, so you're always sort of getting to that 65 anyway.
And the bonds we invest in, they're very short. They're all relatively short term.
Yeah, they're benchmarked to the intermediate government index, so they're average maturity of about 4 years. 4 to 5 years, yeah, and it's a fairly laddered approach. You know, they purposely have set them up to just sort of roll down the curve and then mature.
But that's a conservative an approach for $850,000 as you can have.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like to go equities, but I know what you mean. We are higher than our 60%, you know, goal for equities. Overall, I don't know, I'm not too much into bonds, but I mean, I know we have to protect our investment, but.
It's one of the concerns with the bonds is the constant talk of rates rising, you know, which would just, at least on the short term, would, might not help us if we invest more in bonds, but.
I worry about the timing right now.
Timing, right.
Which a given, they're going to increase rates at some point. I mean, I think they're not going to do it in June, I don't think, because the economy is still a little shaky. Mm-hmm. I did read that, but maybe later in the year, they're anticipating a rise in the rates. I mean, so that would lessen the value, obviously, of the bonds. But I mean,
absolutely true. You know, what you do to mitigate that, for the most, I'll say for the most part, they buy those bonds and hold them to maturity so that as long as you hold a bond to maturity, then you will have not lost appreciation. You know, it's sort of the negative of some of these bond mutual funds because they can lose money forever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, if you were thinking you wanted more in equities, then I think that begs a different discussion, which was a discussion we had last time, was do you want to change your strategic allocation decision? Right now, you're making what seems feels like more like a tactical decision, you know, and do you want to be in a position of making tactical decisions? Or if your discipline is, we want to be 60-40, you've got extra money, you're over-allocated to equities, you know, at least my experience has been is then you take it back to the targets. If your target's not correct for you on a, you know, a more strategic basis, then you should have that separate discussion as should your target be something different than 60%.
And we will have that discussion in August when we talk about the investment policy statement, correct?
We surely can.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, as a pension, we can weather the storm. I mean, any volatility in the future, I mean, we'll be here for a long time. I mean, we can just, you know, weather it out. But I think over time, you know, the equities will outperform bonds. You know, so, you know, I just kind of a more equity oriented.
I guess the question I would ask you, because with some experience with Sussex County, okay, yeah, back in 2007, you did go to 70% target. You were very well funded. You were in great financial position, you know, and you said, let's take a long-term perspective. Went to 70% equities. The market crashed. You've been at 60 since then. So I think what you want to do, and so you, to some degree, you got a little bit whipsawed. You were at the highest allocation right before the equities went down, and then while equities were going up, you were at the lowest allocation to equities. You know, so everybody's long-term until short-term happens. So it's how do you react to that? Now, I will tell you, some of my clients when the equities went down in 2009, you know, they started buying back into equities. They, you know, if their target was 65% and they had gotten all the way down to 55, they didn't immediately move 10%, but they moved about 2% every quarter, you know, so that within about a year they had dollar cost average back up to the targets. They bought low, you know. Sussex County and one of my other clients have not done that, you know. So I think you really need to think and say, so how would you react, you know, if the market, you know, if you move yourself up and the equities go down, will you be willing to buy into equities when, you know, when the market's going down? So, you know, and if not, then I'd say don't move up now, because equities, we haven't felt the pain of, you know, a sustained equity downturn. We've had, you know, one quarter in 2010, one quarter in 2011. But, you know, how would you react? How would the council act, you know, to that? You know, if not, I'd say then.
If in reality, that's only 1% of the total pension fund anyway, so it's not going to move the needle too much either way.
That's a very good point.
So even if you put it all in the bond fund, it's only going to change it to, what, 64, you know, instead of 65, 35. It's not going to move it all that much.
That's right.
So I kind of be in favor of just putting it back in the bond funds and having the discussion in August about the total change in position.
Mm-hmm. If we do that, we put it back in the bonds. I'm wondering if it would make sense just to specify a shorter term, shorter than 4 or 5 years or whatever, you know, for this 850 anyway, just to be a little on the conservative side with, I mean, considering, because if we buy a five-year bond and interest rates go up in the next few months, the value of it will go down, yeah. Although we would own the bond, so we would get whatever interest rate it is.
My guess is that they would buy, you know, they want to stay as duration neutral as possible. So they're going to buy, I would suspect, probably like a 3 or 4 year bond. You know, I go back to what actually you had suggested years ago. You just buy them and you hold them till they mature, you know, that's basically what Wilmington Trust is doing. Doesn't mean they won't make changes. It's not strictly a buy and hold strategy. They do monitor them, they will make changes, but they're pretty much, because of your request, and I think it was a very good request, is just let them roll down the yield curve and mature. I think trying to say to the bond manager, well, you've got $10 million here, but this $850,000, you know, buy. I would say then just go out and buy your own treasury or buy it, just leave it in the money market if you're not sure what you want to do. Mm-hmm. That's the other choice, is sit in cash. It won't draw you any return, but you could sit in cash until August is another choice.
If we buy the bonds and hold them to maturity, what do you anticipate the rate of return would be, though? I mean, it's not going to be much, 2% or something, whatever.
It's not going to be much. No, it's...
It's not going to be too extravagant on the return anyway, and you're locked in for 4 years or potentially, depends on the duration of the bond. You know, just to me, that's not too great of a return. I mean, I think we can do better with equities. I mean, potentially, I mean, as you point out, right now the Dow is, you know, breaking records and everything, but, you know, it's kind of, if we go out of ways, you know, we might be okay there, you know. If there is a downturn, you know, hopefully it'll be a recovery relatively quickly instead of the last one, mm-hmm. You know, 2008.
Well, given our current investment policy, this rebalancing recommendation here is consistent with that investment policy, and it's not enough really to move the needle one way or another by doing something different. So after this discussion, I feel comfortable with this rebalancing as shown.
Of course, we do maintain 60-40 officially, and I mean, and we attempt to do that. It's mainly because of the state investment that we do go higher on the equities. I mean, I know Gina's vigilant on the 60-40, trying to, you know, balance that out as, you know, quarterly or whenever it can be done. I mean, so we are adhering as well as we can, you know, to our policy. It's just, we can't control the state's investment percentages.
So. That's why within the amount that you can control, if you want to take have that as close to 60-40, that would mean put it into bonds.
Oh, yeah. I understand that, but I'm just saying that we're doing what we can. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, 2%. I mean, I don't jump up and down for that. I mean, just.
It's absolutely, I agree. I mean, bond, you know, you buy bond, even when bonds are at 5%, you know, you're expecting stocks to do 10%. Bonds are there primarily to be your protection when the equity market goes down. Okay.
We got 40% protection there, I mean, already. But
so that's why I think the discussion needs to be around strategic. You know, you decided at the last meeting that you want to stay this 60-40, you know. Maybe that needs to be part of the discussion again in August, as you suggested, of, you know, should that piece be, you know, because bonds over the next 5 to 10 years are going to give 2.25, 2.5, you know. I mean, it's not going to be pretty, you know.
That's the problem.
And U.S. stocks, we think, are going to be less than historic norms also. Cause
they're calling for single digits, but definitely in excess of 2%.
Right, yeah.
But if something happens that none of us could anticipate and the market,
oh yeah,
you know, tanks down, then we have the security with the bond, or more security with the bond.
I know there'll be a correction at some point. I mean, it always happens. But I mean, if this were had a higher rate of return, it'd be a little different. But that's just from this thinking. I personally don't own any bonds. It's all equity. So. In my own account, so I mean, that's my way of thinking, and you know, you have to take the hit when it comes, you know. But I think overall, I mean, look at 2013, that was a fantastic year for equities. I mean, and 14 was a good year, so I mean, so you have to just have to weather it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think you have to understand that if you do take a hit on the equity side, that's going to change the funding too. So you got to be mindful of that as well. I mean, even though we have a long period of time and you can take the hit, year to year they recalculate the funding. So that I wouldn't want that to affect the funding levels, especially if we're going to have cuts in budgets and stuff like that. So that would be my only concern.
Right, and with some of the stuff you're seeing, yeah. I mean, one of the things, and this is really more the discussion for August, but one of the, you know, typically we talk about jumping in 5% increments, you know. But it may be that maybe you just decide to do 2%, you know, make it, you know, that might be a more comfortable level. And I would even suggest at that point, maybe that goes to international equities, because I think that has more opportunities. But well, that's an August discussion. But for today, I guess the question, it seems to me that probably two options. One is you put it into bonds, or two is you leave it in cash. Well, three would be you put in equities, two would you just let it sit until you have a longer-term discussion on strategic allocation. So,
we went through 2008 with no problems, and that was a hellacious drop in the markets. I mean, we've been through it before. So, I mean, I think that might be a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully, downturn. I mean, of that extent. So, I mean, you get a normal recession or a correction, you know, maybe 20%, you know. So I just think we can weather the storm. Because this, usually, you know, when you have a downturn, it doesn't last that long. Usually maybe a year to 18 months, I mean, and sometimes you're back where you were, I mean. So it's, you know, it's not always a lengthy period there. Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
All right, do I have a motion to go with the recommendation of moving the $850,000?
I shall move.
Okay, I have a motion. And do I have a second?
I would second that.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Is there any questions on the motion before we take the vote? Okay, hearing none. Mr. James?
I'm going to vote no. I just don't think it's the best route to go, personally.
Ms. Brewington?
I'll vote yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
I vote yes.
And I vote yes. Motion carried. Okay. We'll move on to the OPEB fund.
One question. I don't know how to phrase this elegantly, but I'm looking at peer group performance, you know, top 7%, top 13%, top 17%. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that consistent peer group performance that's that high, when it falls, and you look back at it, you always say, well, we were in a style that worked for us when the market favored it, but now the market doesn't favor that style, and now we're 70th or 80th percentile. And I'm wondering if we could engage, perhaps when in August, mm-hmm. we could engage in a conversation that would say, well, what market we can't foresee market conditions, but what market conditions would hurt us most in terms of our style of investing, and what steps might we take, if any, that could help protect us? And I don't know if that could be a productive conversation, because, again, if we knew the future, it would be natural to protect ourselves against it. But, just over the years, you just hear this time and time and time again, that the best performer in one period of time becomes the worst performer in the next period of time because of some style or some approach to the market that was great but now is terrible. So I don't know if I phrased that question very well at all. But
I think it's very valid. Interesting enough, tomorrow I'm giving a talk at the Pennsylvania Public Employee Retirement Systems, which is papers for all of the municipalities in Pennsylvania. And we put together, and this might seem off track at first, but we'll actually get to your issue. And we actually put together, Pierce Park puts together a database for all the Pennsylvania counties, a peer group database. And it's initially it was just how did they rank return versus everybody else? Because I could tell you, all the things that we think we do for our clients, we went out and surveyed them 3 years ago. We said, what's the most important thing? We said, the most important thing they do is tell us how we do against everybody else. I said, and over all the years we've tried to educate people, say, you know, well, this plan's 75% equities, this one's 55% equities, this one's going to do great in up markets, this should do great in down markets, and this has a different fund level and all that. And still ultimately that's what they want to know. But then we also show them, you know, funded ratios and, you know, a whole series of things. And my very first slide starts to say, because everybody says, how do we compare to everybody else? And my first slide starts out saying, what are you comparing? You know, is it peer group? You know, is it, you know, if you had two investments and one fund did 0% 1 year and 16 the next, the other did 8% each year, which would you choose? Well, just knowing that information, you'd pick the one that did 8% both years. But in the 1 year where everybody else is 16 and you're 8, you're not going to be happy. You're going to be ecstatic when everybody else is 0 and you're 8. So there's got to be some context around peer group. You know, that's, to me, that's just one piece of data. It just happens that that's what people most want to see. And you have looked very good. And it's actually not driven by any one particular thing. If you look at in over the past 3 years, the state has underperformed your total fund return. At 5 years, the state's above your total fund return. So sometimes it's this combination of things you've put together. But I would say I'd be more concerned if your fund was aggressively invested and you were in a top peer group during a time when it paid to be aggressive. Overall, you're conservatively invested. You know, when I look across it, yet you've had very strong returns. Will that always happen? I don't know. But we can get to that. I just wanted to give a little flavor of some of the context of what we can talk about in August about, you know, how do you want to evaluate your performance? What are the real metrics out there for doing that?
Thank you. It's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. On to OPEB?
Yes.
Okay. Go to the next tab. Your market value as of the end of March was $30.8 million. And it was $31 million. We'll just round it up just a little bit on the one-page sheet you'll see. gain was $544,000, and one-year gain was 2.2. That's net of investment management fees, net of all the mutual fund cost and your investment management fees. We do show returns on a gross basis, though. On the right-hand side, that's because when we get to the universe comparison, universes are done on a gross basis. 65% equity target was implemented. Carl, you approved that, and then we went about the process of getting that implemented. You had very strong performance by Thornburg Global Opportunities, poor performance by American Funds International Growth and Income. I'll talk about that in a moment. Target small cap fund manager changes, if you recall, I talked to you about that back in February. We'll get to that in a moment also. You did ask us to come back and say, do we have recommendations or options to look at in that space? For those of you, and maybe I'll get ahead of myself here, but for those who may not have been here or may not recall, Target's returns actually were fine. Their cost for a small cap value fund were fine. But the reason why they were originally put in the portfolio was they were a multiple manager approach, you know, which we'd like in a small cap space, because what happens is when managers do very well, especially there, they either get capped out or they take on too much money. So what, and Prudential actually owns Target Fund. They had originally four and then five managers, and as more money came in, they were able to disperse that across that. Well, Prue, back in January, I think, sent out a proxy and said, we'd like to expand our what we're allowed to do here, and blah, 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 and was approved, and don't you know, 30 days later, they fired all the managers and put one manager in charge of that fund, and who is that manager in charge of that fund? Prue. So that's not why you hired them. You hired them because of the, or not why we recommended it. It was a multi-manager approach to multiple disciplines and all that. And all Prue actually does, actually, it's not a bad shop. But if I was doing a search, it wouldn't be the one I'd bring to you. So we said, come back to us with some options. And that's what you'll see here is an option to do that. And international equities outperform domestic. Your plan has a lower target to international equities than similar plans. We've talked about this before. In a moment, you're going to see your peer group performance is not as good on the OPEB fund as it was on the pension. Last quarter, it was better on the OPEB than the pension fund. But because of having a lower allocation to international, that on a peer group basis, you know, hurt you. And also, when you had said you want to narrow the number of choices, you know, we had 12 or 13 funds in there, and you narrowed it down to 7. And I'd say from ease of administration, that's worked out. But when one fund doesn't do as well, which American funds didn't do as well, it has a much greater impact, in this case, a negative impact on the performance. So it's only one quarter of observation, but just be aware of that. Then looking ahead, you know, consider terminating target small cap value. We're recommending, in this case, replace with an index fund and then invest the excess cash. Same issue that we just had. Okay. You go to page 48. So I didn't overemphasize the strong performance on the first one, but I'll show it. And here on page 48, you were in the 83rd percentile for the quarter. I wouldn't get overly vetted about that. Note that it was a period where the higher allocations to equities did better. You have a lower allocation here, and you only moved yourself into 65 as the quarter progressed after the decisions were made. Okay, and you have a lower allocation to international, but you also had American funds that had a bad quarter. Okay, and they've continued since then to not have a good, you know, long term. Their returns have been very good. We like their discipline. We like their shop. But they're on our, we had a conference call with them 2 weeks ago. They're on our, I'll say, our radar screen to see, you know, we don't want to be overly precipitous to say, okay, hey, you had a bad quarter, we're going to get rid of you, get rid of them at the wrong time. But if it can, if the trend continues, we will look at some, you know, some alternatives for you. The 1 year, you know, 24th percentile, and you can read the rest there. Go to page 52. So I'll have to say this. And do you know where I'm headed with this?
Yeah, I know where you're headed with this.
Okay. You go to the lower right-hand corner, that's performance above and below the benchmark. So you saw for quite a long time you were below the benchmark. Last year when you implemented Consulting Plus, for three quarters in a row you were above the benchmark. And you just got rid of Consulting Plus, and now you're a little bit below the benchmark. So I had to say it. You're not a lot below, but you are a little bit below. So just a little bit, and it's just one quarter. So that very easily could swing the other direction. You weren't here, but they thanked us for the great work we did and the great performance, and then they said, we don't want you for that anymore. Yeah, but watch it for a year and see what happens. That's what you decide. I think that makes a lot of sense. As I mentioned earlier, I'll pick out most of the funds you can see for the quarter around their peer group, 56th percentile, 60th, 54th, 44th. Thornburg continues to have just outstanding lights out performance. If you may recall, though, we did put them on the watch list, which with those kinds of returns, how could you possibly do that? They had so much turmoil within their firm, not this particular product, but they were managing, they had about $1 billion in this product, they had $100 billion in total. Their flagship product is their international value product. They went from two portfolio managers to three portfolio managers at this point in time. All three of them are gone. They've left, gone to different shops. Performance was terrible. You keep seeing this fleeing of money from the large institutions. And they lost, it was probably about $25 or $30 billion in that particular product, they had $60, $65 billion. The concern from your side is, okay, do they start rating the talent that's in the global equity? If I'm a company and I've got one product that's got $25, $30 billion, I've got another one that's got $1 billion, am I going to leave this one alone? Well, I should. Maybe this becomes my flagship. Or maybe I start rating the talent here, or maybe the talent here starts getting concerned and they leave and go somewhere else. Or maybe they just don't, maybe they don't rate the talent, but they don't put money back into what's needed to be done. That's why we put them on the watch list. They've continued to have very good performance. They seem to have righted their ship. They've strengthened up the international value team. We've taken them off the watch list and put them on what I'll call a heightened awareness list. So that's not anything official. That's just sort of from our eyes. We're saying a watch list is pretty formal, and you need to take action at some point. There's not a set. It's got to be in two quarters or three quarters, but, it's a more official approach. A heightened awareness list is just saying we've got some other names that we've looked at that are backups in case if this turns the wrong direction, if they start losing. The thing that would concern me most is if the portfolio managers, two key portfolio managers on that portfolio, if one of those two left, then we've got a list ready to go right behind that. In fact, a couple of the people who were at Thornburg went to another shop, Artisan, who you're probably familiar with, and so Artisan is somebody who we like a lot also in that space. I'm not saying that's who we specifically recommend, but so we already know where we would go with this. But, and American funds, you can see 95th percentile. That always gets, that's only for a quarter. The 1 year is 84th percentile. That's not great. But I also look at it and say, they're being compared to a peer group of core international managers. And they tilt toward the value side. They're not fully a value manager, but they're definitely a distinctive tilt toward value within the core space. If you recall from the pages I showed earlier in the beginning, growth significantly outperformed value. So it was going to be tough for them to meet the average if they stayed true to their discipline. So I'm not overly vetted out that they underperformed. And it's not a huge, if you look at their benchmark, they're 1.5%, 1.7% below for the quarter, 2% for the year. That's not a ton for an international manager. But it's still 95 still catches our eyeballs. So we had a conference call with them, as I said, 2 weeks ago. We'll see where they go with that. They have a very good discipline, multi-manager approach to within their fund portfolio structure. So That's really it. Let me add one. The one thing that has actually sort of surprised me, MFS low volatility, you'd expect not to do as well in markets where returns are better. It's really there to protect you in a down market. And yet, they had a very, very good year. And their quarter was, you know, above their benchmark. I would not have expected them to be above their benchmark for this quarter. So that's a positive, you know.
How did we end up with the American Fund's international growth and income as opposed to, like, their flagship, which is, like, the Euro-Pacific Fund?
Because you already, you know, you have Thornburg, who has a growth tilt toward it. Euro-Pacific has a growth tilt to it. So we wanted to have some combination of that. In Euro-Pacific, one of my concerns, and I mean, years, 20, 25 years, it's done fabulously. It is also so big, and I would have said this 5 years ago, it's always a bit of a concern of mine, will they continue to be able to perform like they have in the past? Although they do.
Right. I'm just curious, yeah. Just for background for me, I was just wondering how that we ended up with that one.
Yeah. It's really, I'll call it the engineering of it, that we want some growth, some value, some core, you know. And
got you.
Yeah. But that fund itself, I think, is a very good fund. So, and just for you, these are all R6 shares. So with them. So. Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Yes.
On page 45, it has a summary of cash flows, and it has like beginning market value, and then net additions and withdrawals.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is like for 1 year, 3 years. It's showing under net addition and withdrawals negative numbers, and I know we're drawing out to pay current pensioner benefits, but does that seem right? Because that kind of shows that we're drawing on principal with this relatively early date.
Because you have net withdrawals, you're saying?
Yeah. It shows it has. Beginning market value, like on 3 years, for instance, $24 million. Net withdrawals, $363,000. Mm-hmm. Investment earnings, $6.8 million, and so on. But, or maybe they're maybe.
Well, it's a byproduct of having such good returns in both these funds over the last 5 years is that your annual required contribution goes down. And if your benefit payments will continue to go up, but if your ARC's going down, that spread means you have a net. You're more likely to have a net cash outflow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and then the other question I had. I mean, I personally don't have a problem with adding a few more funds to diversify. I mean, but I don't know how others feel about it.
I don't have a problem with that either, but I think there was a desire because of the size of the fund to narrow what was 13 down to, you know, roughly this size. And maybe what I might suggest is maybe let this go for a bit as it is. And then if it doesn't continue, you know, if we can watch this versus what our other clients do that do have 12 or 13. So I know, like, at 1.9, our other ones are at 65% did about 2.1 last quarter. So you were a little bit below that. It's not a huge amount. And you have a more conservative, not a lot, but a little bit more conservative fixed income than our average client. They're all benchmarked in intermediate govy credit. It's not a whole lot different, but a little bit there. So maybe you might want to, I would say, let's watch this maybe for a couple quarters and see, and I can tell you how that's doing versus the other ones that are, you know, have 12, 13, and maybe you move it up to 10, maybe you leave it where it is, maybe you move it back, you know. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Baker, as a follow-up to your question, just our annual required contribution, or what we had in the budget, was 2.2, and our benefit payments were 1.6. So we are putting more into the fund than we are spending.
Okay.
So I'm
maybe there's
not sure the timing of it is why it's showing negative, but yeah. We do put more in than we pull out.
Well, and you will be putting more in this quarter. So this quarter, you'll have a cash inflow because of the, you know, the cat, you know, you did change before. What you used to do is you put all the money in at one time, and you know, and then it was managing that cash flow issue. All of a sudden, you had this swamp of money come in. How do you, you know, where do you invest it? But you knew you were going to have to pull it out during the course of the year. Now you're putting it in each month to pretty much match up to what your benefit payments are. And then at the end of the year, as you're doing now, is you're chewing it up. So this quarter, you should see actually a net cash inflow with $675,000.
There's no more questions on the performance, and we'll move on to the rebalancing of the OPEB.
Can we do this first? Because this will impact what you decide on rebalancing. Do you want to get really? Do you want to get rid of target? And if so, what do you do with target fund? You know, we were recommending just put into the Vanguard Small Cap Value Index Fund. This is the stapled pages. Cover says Sussex OPEB small cap value. So we already talked about target, you know, the value index fund. So it's pretty straightforward. It's an index fund. It's 0.09% cost. You can see the number of holdings in that fund. Its benchmark is slightly different than target. Vanguard likes to use the CRSP index. And then on page, you know, 2 and 3, you just see some return information. You know, there's some periods of times that target did better than Vanguard. Other times, not as well. But when we looked at it, you know, we go back, because one of the questions may be, why not another index, why not another active small cap value fund? Because we would want to look, as the way it's engineered, we're pulling this piece out here, we want to put the piece back in its place. And there's a couple that have done very well, but they, their time, you know, Touchstone is one, is, if you're familiar with them, but they, you know, they'll have periods where they outperform and they underperform, and then all of a sudden a whole lot of money comes in, and all of a sudden they choke on it again. So, you know, our recommendation is just to index is inexpensive. You know, we like doing the active management on the international and the global space. That's where we have found where you can add alpha, additional return. And that a lot of times in the domestic equity space, it's so well picked over, it's very tough for an active manager to outperform on a consistent basis without taking a lot of risk.
Well, I personally, you know, I have a bias toward passive and index and, you know, lower, longer-term manager costs. You don't have to be quite so smart if you've got 50, 60 basis points already in your pocket just simply because your costs are that much lower. So that's a personal bias of mine that makes me like this recommendation.
And we're small cap value as opposed to growth or blend because the other fund was, or was that a decision that was made some time ago?
Well, you're picking up some of the other, so like through Thornburg Global, that's an all cap growth. So you're picking up some through there. So when we engineer it all together, MFS low vol value actually has a pretty decent chunk in small and mid cap also, and they're sort of more core like. So picking up through there. so for the rebalance, I think they'd want to, they just, board wants to, I think the process would be first vote on whether you want to switch from target to small, to the Vanguard fund, and then go to the rebalance sheet.
Correct.
In which case, I would move this shift of assets as contained in the recommendation materials we have in front of us.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any questions on the motion? Okay, take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Okay, so we're going to move, close out target, move it to Vanguard, and then a deposit of $675,000. You're recommending fixed income?
Yes, but not totally.
Good. Thank you.
So, well, just quite frank, truing it back up to 65%. And so part of that would go to the Vanguard Index Fund, $170,000. You can see target, you know, as of when we prepared this was $937,000. $960,000 would go to Vanguard, and $455,000 would go to Wilmington Trust, and then there's just a little bit of cash to leave out, left over. And you actually always want to leave a little bit of cash, because when you make these transitions, you know, you're going, we'd say to them, sell all of this and buy this dollar amount of that. But on the day that you sell it, you don't know exactly, you know, you won't know till the close of the day. So you always leave a little excess cash for that.
Okay, do I have a motion to, for the recommendation to move the excess funds to Vanguard Institutional Index, $170,000, and fixed income, $455,000, leaving the rest in cash?
I would so move as per the sheet we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. I have a motion and a second.
I'll second that.
And I have a second. Any questions on the motion? Okay. Hearing none, we'll take a vote. Mr. James?
This is being a little bit inconsistent, but I'll vote yes.
See, I knew I should have put just a little bit of equity on the other one.
Yeah, just move a little bit. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Okay. You have anything else, Mr. Schoen?
That's
okay.
It. That's
all. All right. Does any of the members have any questions or additional business at this time? Mr. Leahy?
Just a general question. I'm sorry I missed the last meeting, but have we revisited the topic of adequate pension holdings, what's the term I'm looking for?
Contributions.
Yeah, the contribution levels and the, you know, I think what we were at 80-some percent or something, the last number I remember looking at perhaps a year ago. Mm-hmm. Do we keep a close eye on that and how... When are we next going to be seeing what those numbers look like?
Sure. It was a meeting this time last year where we had the report. Because of the new GASB rules, I have to have a measurement date as of June 30th, so the report has to be done as of June 30th now. After we get this report, which I'll bring it back to the committee, I have in the budget to have a new actuary study done, a complete look at our pension fund, how we're doing it. Are we, you know, doing it? Should we be looking at other types of plans, things like that, for our employees? So, yes, we're looking at that very closely, and it is in the budget to do that. For the budget this year, we are contributing above the required contribution at about 113% of what we need to contribute. So we are still in line with contributing more than what we need to.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of analysis done about the required contribution calculations.
Yes.
And are they sufficient and satisfactory? Because, you know, a lot of municipalities use the same calculations.
Right.
to justify, you know, 60% or even less levels. So do you have any concerns that the calculations are leading us in the right direction?
I do. And when we get the report, I've asked to do it both ways, entry age and the way we're currently using, to make sure that we are planning for the long term and that both the calculations are looking in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, yes, and I'm aware of the calculations, and I feel that they're going towards entry age and that we need to maybe look at that also.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the accounting industry really has mandated as part of your accounting. For your funding, you don't have to, mm-hmm. but the accounting industry is saying for GASB 67 and 68 reporting, you should choose entry age. Yeah,
yeah, and it puts you in a tough position. I mean, you're looking at calculations that say here's your required contribution, but over the course of years, it doesn't give you the result that you'd be happy with.
That's correct.
So I'm delighted that you're looking at that. Thank you.
May I say one thing? I will say, though, when I look at what Sussex County has done to fund your benefit promises, both on the pension and your OPEB, I've got to say you're probably number one of anybody I see out there, my clients as well as others, of your funded level on your OPEB plan is so much higher than anybody else. Most of them haven't even started to put any money away. You know, they're ecstatic if they're 30% funded on the OPEB fund, and you're 75 or 80 or something like that. I mean, you're truly on a peer group way up here. And on the pension, you're maybe not the highest funded, but you're still in very good shape, you know, in my opinion.
I think,
doesn't mean you can't tweak things, and I think you do need to make some changes probably. But.
Well, every news article that appears, you know, if it's less than 100%, it's not satisfactory in the eyes of many. So that's the context within which, you know, my questions are motivated, because, you know, should it be picked up by the News Journal or Cape Gazette or whatever, if it's not 100%, the gadflies are all going to say, well, we're not doing our jobs.
And the tough thing to be able to explain to people is to say, if you're 100% funded, that means you have fulfilled the obligation for when that person retires and that person's still working. So the day that person, you hire them, you don't say, they're going to work for us for 40 years. Let's put all the money in today. You know, you fund it over their lifetime,
right?
You know, and so you wouldn't necessarily expect to be 100% funded, you know, but being able to communicate that and for people to understand that, that's a tough trick.
Yeah.
You
know? As I recall, I think even if we were 100% funded, we'd still have a substantial required contribution, because we have the county in the long run is growing, and it kind of, you know, you will eventually have more employees, I'm sure, and salaries go up, you know, gradually over time.
Yeah.
And as I know, I think the actuaries.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah, and I think the council and the county and Todd and Gina and all and everybody with the county should be commended for trying to put more money into both funds whenever they can, and getting that done, because that really helps over time. I know it did in the past, it helped a lot, but when you can, to put some extra money in it, contribute some extra money.
Yeah, I can definitely say that. I don't know anybody else that puts extra money in, so that puts you way up here also, you know.
Gina? Last meeting, you mentioned that you were approached by paramedics, and they had asked for an analysis of us, of them potentially going with the state for their pension plan. And I think things have happened in that area. Can you, has a final decision been made by them on where they want to pursue going with the state?
Well, I presented the report that I presented here at the committee to council, and I said that our recommendation, and a strong recommendation for myself, is that they would not go to the state. And I've communicated that to the EMS. They're aware of it. They see the numbers. They understand the decision. And So they've come back to us and communicated to Mr. Lawson and I that they respect that decision, and we're good.
That's good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion and a second?
Second.
And a second? Okay. We have a motion to adjourn. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.